Welcome to the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Hello and welcome to the Keystone Kickoff Show. I'm Jim Galante. He is Dustin Schutte, safely ensconced in the Midwest where they weren't affected by the weather this past weekend.
That's correct. We were not. And Jim, I have a confession to make, and it's not about the weather. And I have to see Sunday morning, there was a pretty significant American sporting event that happened. The United States-Canada hockey match, gold medal game. I was so tired from the weekend, Jim, that I overslept and did not watch it.
Oh, my God. No. No. Dustin. I am so disappointed in you.
I watched so much college basketball, women's college basketball, a little bit of baseball and softball, watched some of the Genesis Open, and did not watch a single second of the hockey game. And I looked on Twitter afterwards, and I was like, I don't know anything about hockey, but it sure sounds like it was a fun thing to watch.
Well, let me share this. Our listeners know, I believe, who listen to our show regularly, I'm not a big hockey guy. When I get a chance to see it live, I enjoy that. At Penn State, the Pegula Arena, beautiful. It is. Get into Penn State, Dustin. We got to take you to a hockey game too, okay? It's great. But I like, they always say hockey, playoff hockey in the NHL is so good. And it's much more intense and all that. Well, I feel the same way. Olympic hockey, when they would reach the point where, hey, these are elimination games. You lose and you're out. That's what I enjoy. But let me tell you what I really like. Overtime Olympic hockey, they go 3-on-3. It's so wide open. I'm pushing for a 3-on-3 hockey league, Dustin.
I saw a lot of people say this, actually, after the fact. And the Canadians were not very happy, Jim. They were not happy that that's how the game was decided. And, I mean, I don't know. It's I would like to see – I would have liked to watch it. Maybe I'll be able to go back and watch it. Now, I know we're recording a little bit earlier than this will air, so maybe I've already watched it by the time this drops. But I see what this is all about. But I do feel like I got left out. I was just – you know, I was out at the arena until about midnight every night the past week, and I got home and it was like, I got to sleep in tomorrow morning. Not even registering that there was a big hockey game on the TV. So I missed the whole thing.
Well, the best part, this is like, hockey players are crazy, okay? There's just, it's, and the camera work is so good at the Olympics, okay, which is a whole nother discussion. But there was a high stick by a Canadian. Now, he went to the penalty box for 4 minutes for it. No doubt, you see the stick goes up, knocks a couple teeth out. He picks the teeth up, hands them like to the trainer, and keeps on playing. So after the game, when they're skating around, just celebrating, he's got the biggest smile on his face and missing teeth, Dustin.
Yeah.
That right there is the definition of a hockey player.
There, yes, that is exactly right. That is how I expect a hockey player to react to that situation.
And those poor sports in Canada, you're just lucky we didn't make you the 51st state.
That's right.
And we don't even need you to win at hockey, win the gold medal. So take that.
Right. I did see a joke that was, imagine that your entire country is covered for ice 90% of the year and you lose to a country who has alligators. I thought that was pretty good.
You know, isn't this just great? You know, you and I, who, I don't know about you, I cannot even stand up on ice skates.
No, and I can't either.
And we're talking trash to the Canadians about hockey. So shows you, probably tells you more about us. But right. Anyway, How about we talk a little bit about college football, Dustin? And let me tell you where I'm headed today. It's the off season. Not a lot of news going on right now. There's a lot of topics, though, I think we'll hit during the off season individually and really drill down and analyze them. But I think, Dustin, we are going through a time period right now over the last 5 years or so that it's probably the greatest change to our sport in the history of the sport. Is that fair?
I would say so. I mean, I think there's no question based on who we saw win the national championship that it's now a completely level and changed playing field.
It really is. And what I want to do is kind of take a look at these changes and figure out how did it happen? Why did it happen? What are the effects? And are they good or bad or kind of neutral or just different? And here are the things that I lined up that I think have caused the changes in the sport or are the changes. Number one, and it seems to get lost in the wash right now, conference realignment. And I almost feel like in some ways that was the trigger to a lot of these things that we've changed. And we can trace, well, we could go back a lot further, Dustin, but about 4 or 5 years ago in this time frame, Texas and Oklahoma pick up and make that move to the Southeast Conference. That was a real triggering mechanism, I think.
Yeah, it was, because immediately, I remember being at Big Ten Media Days when that news kind of popped out. And at the time, Kevin Warren, was the commissioner of the Big Ten. And he was asked directly, what is going to be your response to this? And basically he gave a ho-hum answer and, wasn't going to give away what his idea was, what his plan was. I have a suspicion that he probably knew something was going to happen between Texas, Oklahoma, and the SEC. And I don't know how much later it was, but essentially, okay, now we're going to go out and we're going to get USC, UCLA, Oregon, and Washington, and make a bigger conference and try to get, go coast to coast and get some of the big players in terms of the television market. So, yeah, Texas going and Oklahoma going to the SEC really kind of triggered that. I mean, you can look back to some of those others where the Big Ten expanded. They brought in Nebraska to make it a 12-team league and then Maryland and Rutgers to make it 14 teams. But the latest conference realignment is really what set, because then the other conferences, the Big 12, the ACC, and the Pac, well, now the completely revamped Big Pac 12, were put in scramble mode. So, yeah, I mean, I think that's changed dramatically. And now you've got, without question, instead of five major conferences in college football, you essentially have two.
And it's that, again, it was triggered by Texas, Oklahoma. And it's funny you mention, bringing in Nebraska and Maryland and Rutgers. Can you recall when Penn State was an independent and not part of the Big Ten?
I remember Penn State coming into the Big Ten. I don't remember them. I would have been around like kindergarten. So I remember like my family making a big deal about, Penn State's coming in now. But I don't remember Penn State pre-Big Ten, if that makes sense.
Got it. As someone who does, and that may be the real long-term trigger, okay? And it happened, 30 years ago, over 30 right. years ago. But the quick story, if I can take the time here, Dustin, was Penn State was an independent. And we always say, whatever the question is, the answer is usually money. Yeah. And as an independent, Penn State did very well. Prior to coming to the Big Ten, they won, two national championships in the span of 5 years, from 82 to 86. And Joe Paterno always knew the revenue was up and down based on their performance. So it was hard to budget, hard to plan. He thought the security of a conference would help them. He actually was looking for an Eastern Conference. And back then, Big East basketball was huge. And they were starting to get, like, half the teams were, you know, were not football playing, you know, the Georgetown, St. John's, Villanova. There were a bunch of, you know, like the Pitt and, well, Syracuse, BC. He wanted to form an all-sports conference. But basketball was so big at the time, they didn't want Penn State coming in and being a drag on their basketball conference, no matter what they could do for football. So they actually countered with, well, how about just a football conference? So you could help us out, but we're not going to help your basketball or other sports. And so we went from Big East to just trying to create a, you know, an all-sport Eastern Conference, BC, Syracuse, Temple, Pitt, maybe even going all the way down the East Coast to get Miami and Florida State, Maryland, but it didn't happen. So they were left with the option of joining the Big Ten, and it was the Big Ten presidents, not the Big Ten ADs and coaches. In fact, the coaches all had a hissy fit. Bobby Knight, Woody Hayes, Bo Schembechler, they went crazy. They didn't want Penn State to join, which shows you how short-sighted they were at the time.
Yeah, exactly. That's a big-time football brand. And I mean, like, could you imagine? They'd probably all be rolling over and throwing all kinds of hissy fits now if they saw what this league became, going absolutely coast to coast and all this stuff. So, yeah, I mean, the Penn State edition is child's play compared to what we have now in terms of conference realignment.
Well, and the other part to it is it took years before, you know, the process took years to happen after the announcement. Now it's like, oh, yeah, we'll see you in the fall.
Right.
Back then, it took years for them to implement it for some ungodly reason. And the last story, just because I am going down this path, I will whine. 94 was like the second year that Penn State was there, undefeated teams. Back then when they voted, you would always, both the coaches and the writers, the two different polls, you voted for the team in your conference. Turns out Big Ten writers all voted for Nebraska, who was still in the Big 8 or Big 12, whatever it was then. They did not vote for Penn State. So Penn State lost out on a vote for a national championship because their fellow conference members did not support them. Every Penn State fan old enough still remains bitter about that. Not me, but all the others, Dustin. That's it for quarter one. We got lots more to go. Stay tuned.
Happy Valley United is the NIL collective that serves all 31 sports and over 850 student-athletes at Penn State. These opportunities allow student-athletes to engage with charitable causes and participate in business engagements to build their brands while making a positive impact. The collective connects fans, alumni, businesses, and charities with student-athletes harnessing the power of Nittany Nation. Go to happyvalleyunited.com to connect with your favorite Nittany Lion team.
It's quarter number two on the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. He's Dustin Schutte. I'm Jim Galante. It's quarter number two of our show. Dustin, I was going into the Wayback Machine, showing that my bitterness survives even over 30 years later, and it won't go away, Dustin, okay? Just so you know.
That's fair. There are some Pacers-Knicks games that I'm bitter about. There's some calls in certain games that I'm still bitter about, so I totally get it from 25, 30 years ago.
By the way, I know it's off track, but those Indiana Pacers-Knicks games, they're that Reggie Miller era.
Yep.
They were wars. They were fantastic battles. Let me give you one last story from that era of conference realignment and so on. Florida State was another one of those independents that had to decide where to go. They apparently had the option of joining the ACC, as they did, or joining the Southeast Conference. They chose the ACC because they saw it as an easier path to a national championship.
Well, I mean, they were probably correct in terms of their competition level, but if they were in the SEC, I mean, they would put themselves in a pretty good spot.
But it seems almost quaint now to make a decision based on winning a national championship versus making more money.
Yeah, I mean, now it's all about the money, right? Like, I mean, that's how you make every single decision. It has nothing to do with winning. I mean, I think people could make the argument like you have a better shot to make the play, and it's fair. You have a better shot to make the playoff if you're in the Big Ten or the SEC as opposed to any other conference. But that's not why anybody's making these decisions. It's because of the paycheck they get from the television networks.
It is. But I'll tell you what, there is a perspective that, you know, would SMU have been able to make the playoffs if they were in the Southeast Conference or Big Ten?
You know, that's a good question. With the talent they have, I don't know, but the flip side of the coin to me would be if you're in the SEC and playing, do you maybe attract better talent than you are if you play the ACC? Because, I mean, you can make – there is an appeal. Like, even if you're not at the LSUs or the Alabamas, there is an appeal of, like, well, we're going to go into Tiger Stadium. We're going to go into Bryant-Denny Stadium and play in some of these big-time environments. So, and by the way, Dallas has a lot of money. I think people are familiar with – well, maybe they're not familiar with the Pony Excess. That's another great 30 for 30. But, yeah, I mean, I think there's an argument to be made, like, we've talked about before, like, does James Franklin have a better opportunity in the ACC to get to the college football playoff than he had in the Big Ten simply because he gets to avoid Ohio State, Michigan, now Indiana and Oregon, and opposed to, you know, in the ACC, what do you have? Basically Miami, maybe Clemson, but they haven't been elite in a few years. So I think there are some arguments to be made about that, but yeah, I mean, it's tough. There's all kinds of arguments you can make one way or another, I think.
Well, I think you hit it, though, with the true variable may not be the conference. It may be the money that you have.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And SMU now has the money. It's no different than, you know, Texas Tech was a playoff team. And what's the difference between current Texas Tech and Texas Tech from a few years ago? It's, you know, the money. And they're mm-hmm. spending it, and they made the playoffs with it. So it seemed like a pretty solid investment on their part if your goal was to make the playoffs, and they did. So, all right, let's get back to our big picture, Dustin. And, you know, I brought up the different topics with you of things that have happened that have changed the game. We also have NIL. We have the health settlement, which meant compensation. We have the transfer portal. We have the expanded playoffs. Your choice. Where do you want to head?
Oh boy. Let's go with NIL. Let's cross that off the list here.
All right. Well, let's hit that. Which many of these topics, Dustin. What gets me is they could have preempted a lot of these things, or the downside, or the things that the. So NIL, which just created the Wild Wild West, could have been averted if they had just said, you know what, we need to pay the players something. And call it an allowance, call it what you will. But they could have paid a reasonable amount of money, and I think that would have calmed everything down.
Well, I even think to that extent, if the NCAA would have updated their rule book every 3 to 5 years instead of being stuck in 1958 or whatever, where you couldn't have, you know, as the example, and I don't know if it's actually true, but like you could have, you know, people could supply bagels, but you can't supply cream cheese or, you know, whatever the, you know, whatever those old myths were. But the point being is, like, if you had gradually kind of updated and said, okay, you know what, we're starting to bring in a lot more money, we will give an allotment, a percentage to the players. All right, we're bringing even more money in. Now, you know, you can do autograph sessions and this. You know, it has to be a reasonable situation. And by the way, you would have had people try to take advantage of this no matter how gradually or, you know, how much you kind of moved along with the times. But you could have done things gradually so that way at one point it wasn't just a complete avalanche of just everything happening all at once. But they refused to do that, and then they get their butts kicked in court, you know, every, it seems like every 6 months. So it really changed the dynamic. And by the way, I don't want this. So I played Division III tennis, so I'm not comparing. But just so people are aware, like, we had advantages of, you know, being able to get extra meals. We had extra time to study for exams. You got free gear. You know, you get a lot of things. There are a lot of benefits. And this was, so I'm at the D1 level. You get even more stuff with that, and you get an allotment. You get a, what do they call that? A
stipend.
Per diem. Yeah, stipend per diem. Whatever. Yeah, stipend is the correct word. You got a stipend, and you got a free education. So it wasn't like they were getting nothing, right? Like, but you could have, you know, lined their pockets a little bit better so that way you don't go from they can't have anything other than the stipend to, oh, by the way, we're signing a $2.5 million contract to keep our quarterback.
Right, right. They went from zero to 100 miles an hour.
Yeah.
And they could have probably prevented that by, when you have a revenue stream for, because of football, of say $50 million, $40 million, the guys who actually go on the field and perform, you probably wouldn't have had to pay them millions if you had said, right, okay, you get, you know, you get your scholarship, you get free room and board, but here's also $40,000. And right, at the time, people looked, oh my God, we can't do that. Well, yeah, you could have. Now, with the house settlement, you're putting out $20 million to your student athletes.
Right.
They could have preempted that very easily.
Oh, for sure. I mean, you could have, a couple, even like $10,000 would have been a huge amount of money to some of these kids. And so, yeah, you could have done some things differently where, again, if you would have just changed your rule book gradually, and, you know, got it up to the times, then you would probably be in a much better situation. And I even think, like, I don't know what the situation was with in terms of healthcare, but, you know, if I suffer, you could have written it in where if I suffer a major injury, then the school is responsible for that. Like, take care of your players that are, especially in football, like in some of these other sports, maybe not so much. Like, you're probably not going to suffer anything major in golf or tennis or, you know, some of these others. But in football, maybe even basketball, where you have a, and it's going to cost you a lot of money down the road, they could have, and maybe some schools did, I don't know, but they could have had some sort of healthcare plan in place where they, you know, helped along with the bills and some of that sort of stuff. I know it's expensive, but also the schools were making a lot of money. So I just look back and think that there were so many gradual steps you could have taken, so that way it didn't all come into this situation where everything felt like it, you know, the whole system was crumbling down in the span of 1 or 2 years. But that was the NCAA dragging their feet and refusing to give up on the amateurism model. And now it's completely collapsed.
It really has. And the other part that comes in with the NIL that you brought up, and I'll segue right into it, the transfer portal. And they are related, where they always said you had to sit out a year if you transferred, which is a major penalty when you really only have a couple years to compete.
Right.
So years ago, they could have put in a, you know what, you get one free transfer. And that probably, again, would have preempted all the problems they had later.
Well, this is, I would even take it, you know, I don't even think you have to go that far. I think, because I still don't really like the one free transfer thing. I think it's fine, but I'm not a huge fan of it. But why? So I believe, unless you had a redshirt year, like that year you sat out cost you a year of eligibility. You could have just said you have to sit out a year. It's not going to cost you a year of your eligibility, but you have to sit out. So even if let's say, you know, one player wanted to transfer after his sophomore year, had already used his redshirt season, you say, you know what, we'll give you the other year. You still get, you know, because the NCAA used to operate, you had 5 years to play four seasons, right? Basically, and there were some, obviously some outliers in that, sometimes, you know, injuries or whatever, but you could have just said, you know what, if you transfer, you have to sit out a year, but then you still get those 2 years, you know, your two remaining years of eligibility. That's fine. You just can't play immediately. I still think that you could have taken advantage of that, but then you would be in a situation where players are like, I want to play now. I don't want to have to wait. And so you could have derailed. So again, it creates an avenue for players who are unhappy or want a new situation to still transfer, but you don't have somebody going from Michigan State to Michigan and then playing the very next season. I think it would have derailed at least a little bit of that to an extent. And that would be the model I would still implement, but that's not happening.
No, and what you have are people, of all people, John Calipari trying to be the voice of reason. You know. And they get one free trade. How are you going to get away with that in the court system, number one? And John Calipari talking about what's just and fair. Look up John Calipari's history, folks, if you don't know what I'm talking about. Just look it up, and you'll know why I speak of him the way that I do. All right, that's it for quarter number two, Dustin. Lots more to talk about when we come back.
Happy Valley United is the NIL collective that serves all 31 sports and over 850 student-athletes at Penn State. These opportunities allow student-athletes to engage with charitable causes and participate in business engagements to build their brands while making a positive impact. The collective connects fans, alumni, businesses, and charities with student-athletes harnessing the power of Nittany Nation. Go to happyvalleyunited.com to connect with your favorite Nittany Lion team.
Let's get back to the action on the Keystone Kickoff Show. Brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. He's Dustin Schutte. I'm Jim Galante. It's quarter number three of our show. And Dustin, we're taking this overall look at what's been happening in college football over, say, the last half decade or so, and all the major changes. I think we traced a lot of it to what happened with conference realignment. And I'll reiterate what we often say here. If you're looking for the answer to the question without knowing the question, the answer is probably money. Okay.
Yep.
And every one of these things, it's about someone making more money, and not necessarily about what's best for the game. And I actually think overall the game has survived these changes pretty well. I still like the game, Dustin. None of these changes have made me less of a fan of the game.
Well, that's interesting. Here's my counter to that. I agree. When the games are being played on game day, still love college football, still enjoy watching the games and the level of competition and the stakes and all of that. So I agree with you on that point. I also used to be a big fan of recruiting. I thought spring practice was, you would get a good idea. I used to love bowl season. Not so much anymore. Like recruiting to me, I understand it's important, but now half of your players are going to leave and go somewhere else. So spring practice, a lot of places. Now we'll see what happens this year. It seems to be a year-to-year thing. A lot of places are getting rid of the spring game. Now I do think that the one-time transfer rule or the one-time transfer window may help with spring practice at least a little bit. I think that you see those players on the field, you know who's going to be on your team next year. So I think that that may help maybe redirect some interest in spring ball. But the recruiting stuff just to me doesn't seem to matter that much anymore. Now, maybe with teams doing revenue sharing and all that, maybe you'll get some guys to stick around that you otherwise wouldn't. But I think from college football used to be, you know, basically 365 days a year. There used to get like 1 month off in either between June and July where you couldn't do any recruiting. You know, there was no summer practice. There was fall camp hadn't started yet. So, but now to me, I'm more invested in it from August through December, and then throw in the playoff games. I will watch a few bowl games here and there, like the Pop-Tarts Bowl. It's amazing. But the rest of it, I think I can kind of do without. And maybe some of it too, Jim, is that the fact it goes through mid-January. And I would, again, I think we both talked about it, I would like to see it no later than like January 8th or 9th. That should be the last college football game, in my opinion.
Well, we're going to hit some of these changes and that they could still make. But I want to hit on this, Dustin, that I feel like the dust is settling a bit on some of these major issues. And let me explain why. The House settlement is what created this ability of the schools to compensate the players, you know, the $20, $21 million. All right, if you want to compete, you're spending that $21 million. Let's just face it. And the TV contracts, especially SEC, Big Ten are getting, but ACC and Big 12, they can play in that ballpark if they want to. Now, that hasn't, you know, made it a completely stable, fair playing field, level playing field, because the bigger schools are still going to spend more, the NIL portion of it. But everybody does have a budget of money that they could give the players. I may not get all of the five stars, but if I'm judicious in my use of those dollars, I can bring talent in. And what I think has definitely happened, Dustin, and you alluded to this early on, is Vanderbilt, SMU, Indiana, these teams now are able to compete. Mm-hmm. A couple of years ago, Texas Tech. Yep. That couldn't have happened a few years ago, Dustin. So good thing or bad thing?
I think it's a good thing. I also think that expanding the playoff helped in that, say, and I'm sure we'll talk about that a little bit more, but I think that those two things go hand in hand. Does Mark Cuban write a big check to Indiana if they're not in the playoff the previous season? Like, you know, because if they go, what, they were 11-1, four teams, they didn't have a great schedule, so maybe they're not in the playoff, and you say, we had a great season, but maybe we're still not national championship caliber. I don't know. I don't have the answer to that. But I do think that, first of all, when you open up the expanded playoff, you could say, hey, we don't have to win all of our games to get in. We don't have to win the conference to get in. There's other avenues where we can get in. And it did the same for the Group of Five conferences. And I know they haven't had great showings yet, but I think over time there's a possibility where you see a Group of Five. I always compare it to, you know, Gonzaga, who was a no-name program in basketball until the mid to late 90s. And now they're one of the juggernauts of the sport. And you could have somebody like that. You could have a Tulane who is, you know, perfectly situated in New Orleans. They've got a great recruiting foundation. They have they don't have a great schedule, but you could see one of those Group of Five teams emerge too. But so you expand the opportunities for teams to get into the field and compete for a college football playoff. And then you allow an Indiana who had, has massive donors and a large alumni base similar to Penn State. Now they're in the field. You have Texas Tech who was, again, they had some good seasons, especially under Mike Leach, but now they are a force to be reckoned with in football, men's basketball, softball. They've got a lot of sports that they poured money into. So it really has opened the door for just about anybody who has the donors to get the job, to, you know, at least be competitive in today's game.
I think that is the case, and it's a good thing. And I also think, and I read something, remember Rashada, the quarterback for Florida, and then he moved on to about five different teams. They finally settled out of court. There was a settlement. He was suing Florida. And it was talked about at that time, which is now, about 4 years ago. It was so wild. There was no established, here's what the money you make as a quarterback. Here's the money you make at any other position. And that seems to be happening. It's only in this last year that I started to see articles, Dustin, here's the going rate by position. So you kind of start to know, it's not collusion, but everyone sort of knows now, hey, if you want a good quarterback, and the quarterback, just like in the NFL, yep, it's way out of proportion with the other positions. And you have a certain value to each position.
Yeah. Well, I was going to say, you know, this is a good lesson for the NFL, because you're going to have some players that you're going to have, a left guard. Let's say a really good left guard, maybe projected first round pick, who says, I think I'm worth $2 million. And, you know, now that we have GMs in college football, they're going to go, that's great that you think you're worth that, but the going rate is $500,000. So you're not going to get $2 million. That's not as important to our football team as the offensive tackle, defensive end, and quarterback positions. That's going to be an interesting word. I think at one point when this first started, Jim, if you were a really good player at any position, you could just probably name your price and people would say, yeah, we think that guy's worth it. Now, after a few years, you've probably seen what are the characteristics? What do you have to win a national championship? And then you're going to see, probably very similar to the NFL, what those important positions are. And there's going to be a going rate for each. The quarterback's always going to be most important. But then probably offensive tackle, defensive end, I don't know after those three positions where you would go, but this is not only going to be something where players are getting paid, but now it's going to be you're going to learn the world of fairness and how it relates to the NFL, because you might be a better overall player than said quarterback, but your position may not be quite as important as said quarterback.
That's right. I might be the absolute best janitor in the world, but I'm not going to make as much as the surgeon at the hospital.
Right.
And that's the way it's going to go. And I think that gives the teams some of the power back, some of the leverage back. And at Penn State, we had been spared much of the transfer portal issues, you know, mass exodus, mass entry of players till this year. And you could see, though, with the team at different positions, it's, again, you don't get this announcement from the coaching staff, oh, we like this guy better than that one.
Right.
But reading between the lines, you could see, you know what? We can't afford multiple high, paid players at that position. We've got to pick and choose. So that becomes more important. And I think the general manager role is becoming more like an NFL. Where are we going to spend our money? Remember, for years, the NFL wouldn't spend money on running backs. Right. We're going to start to see that kind of thing in college football.
Oh, for sure. Anything that happens in the NFL, it's just going to be a trendsetter. I mean, in college football, you might value the running back spot a little bit more than the NFL. Just because I still think, especially in the Big Ten, you can still win a lot of games with your rushing attack. But I would not be surprised if the model in college football looks very similar to the model in the NFL. And there's going to be outliers where you may have a guy like a Catron Allen, just as an example. You might say, you know what, we really need him to win football games, and we're not going to pay him as much as the wide receivers. Whereas if you look at Indiana, they may say, you know what, for our offense, we really need wide receivers. So the top three wide receivers are going to make more money than the running back. So it's not going to be an apples to apples comparison, but it's going to be probably fairly similar when you look across the board.
And I think the best GMs will be the ones who could think outside the box. My example, Howie Roseman from the Eagles, never spent much on running backs. But then he decided Saquon Barkley would be a difference maker at that position. Yeah. You know, he could go get a good running back, probably fairly cheap, but he wouldn't be able to get an elite one.
Right.
So he invested in a Saquon Barkley. Oh, by the way, 2,000-yard rushing season and a Super Bowl championship. Pretty good decision. And that's the kind of role a GM will have. All right, Dustin. That is it for quarter number three. We got one more quarter to go. We'll continue this conversation. And I want to talk to you about what are some of the negative ramifications of these changes when we get back.
Happy Valley United is the NIL collective that serves all 31 sports and over 850 student athletes at Penn State. These opportunities allow student athletes to engage with charitable causes and participate in business engagements to build their brands while making a positive impact. The collective connects fans, alumni, businesses, and charities with student athletes harnessing the power of Nittany Nation. Go to happyvalleyunited.com to connect with your favorite Nittany Lion team.
We head to the home stretch in quarter number four on the Keystone Kickoff Show. Brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. He's Dustin. I'm Jim. It's quarter number four of our show. And Dustin, we're talking about the role of the general manager, the allocation of funds by position. Here's what I'm going to find fascinating. We are now just establishing this is how much a left tackle will cost you. Here's what a right guard will cost you, an edge rusher, those kind of things. When are we going to see someone who says, you know what, I don't have the budget for the big-time quarterback, the big-time wide receiver. How about if I build my team around an offensive line? I'm going to go spend the money there, I don't need the best running back then. I don't necessarily need the best quarterback then. Someone just decides, you know what? I'm going to invest a little differently than everybody else. I'm going to zig when they're zagging, Dustin.
Yeah, I think that that's and especially if you want to win in the Big Ten and the SEC, if you want to win at a high level in college football, that's what you need. But especially in those two leagues, you need a good offensive and defense. That's a really interesting thought. You do have to have good quarterback play, but there have been national champions and I'm not picking on this guy, but A.J. McCarron, for example, won a national championship at Alabama, was not like an elite quarterback in any regard. Same thing you could probably say with Greg McElroy, right? Like, I'm not picking on those guys, but they did have elite players around them. They had really good wide receivers. They had really good running backs. But the offensive line just changes things so much. And if you can be creative, if you have a good offensive scheme, you can scheme around, your talent. We saw it at Purdue for years where they had some pretty good wide receivers, but the way Jeff Brohm would dial up plays, even if they didn't have a first-round draft pick or a second-round draft pick, the way that they ran offense got the ball into the hands of the players in ways that they could still make plays. And so, yeah, that's a really interesting thought. I had not thought of that, but that is one of the things that and I'm going to, relate this back to Purdue. They did not go out and get another quarterback. Ryan Brown had an okay season. I'm saying okay season for a team that went 2-10, but they really did. They focused on offensive line. We got to get bigger. We got to get deeper. We got to get more experienced. So they put some emphasis on, bolstering the running back room, the wide receiver room, but they also put a attention to detail on the offensive line. So I don't know that Purdue has great, players at the skill positions. I think they have good players and probably upgraded, but I'm interested to see how much better that offensive line is because it just makes everybody's life so much easier.
And not to get off topic too much, but at the quarterback position, Dustin, look at our last two national champions. Ohio State won a national championship by bringing in a quarterback from Kansas State.
Yep.
Indiana won a national championship bringing in a guy from
Cal. Yeah.
And within Penn State during the James Franklin era, not so much the five-star quarterbacks, Christian Hackenberg, Drew Aller, but more Trace McSorley. Probably, yeah. He's the one who won the Big Ten championship for Penn State. So maybe you don't need that five-star quarterback. Now, if you're Georgia and Alabama and Ohio State, hey, you bring in talent everywhere. But what if you're one of these other schools, you know? Could you do it a different way? Anyway, I promised Dustin and I would ask about the negative repercussions of some of these things. And, you know, we hadn't really talked about the expanded playoffs, which ties into all these decisions, you know. How did you – can you now sneak into the playoffs where before when it was four teams, you could never think of them? Here are some – I made a list of a couple of the negative things that I think are the repercussions of all these changes. Agents now are such a huge part of this. Agents are people who want to represent players, hanger-ons. Tampering. We saw this. Dabo Sweeney talked about it, documented it very well. Don't know if anything will happen. How about this transferring multiple times? I think players should have the freedom to transfer, but we're getting so many, you know, four or five times. Coaches and staffs making an obscene amount of money. It's skewing the finances of the universities even. How about with the portal happening during playoffs, we saw a player at Penn State like Bo Prabhul leave while his team was making a playoff run. This year we saw someone, Lane Kiffin, a coach, make a move during the playoff situation. And how about, and I'm not even sure if this is a terrible thing or not, but as coaches take new jobs, they bring 10, 15, 20 players from their old school with them. Are those things good for football? How bad are they, Dustin?
Yeah, I don't think they're great for college football. I do believe that, I don't know how to say this, as in terms of the Lane Kiffin situation, I kind of feel like that's one and, you know, one in 100, one in a million. I don't know what the number is. But there aren't going to be many coaches that have a team in the playoff and then decide that they're going to leave for another program. Like to me, Lane Kiffin's just an idiot, and he's very self-absorbed. And I know that there's a lot of college football coaches that have you don't get to that level unless you have an ego, right? So, but to me, like Kurt Cignetti could have easily taken another job somewhere else after his first season at Indiana, or after, you know, even after his second season. But I just think if you're going to be that level of success at one program, there's no reason to leave. Like if you believe you have the resources to be successful, like Texas Tech, why would you leave that job? You're going to be in the Big 12 race probably every year. You have the resources. Why? I don't understand why you would leave that job. I mean, again, if there's another out there where Alabama comes open or LSU, whatever the case might be, maybe you think about it. But to me, Jim, the NIL almost offsets some of that pressure, right? Like you can now win. And I think Indiana is a perfect example. If you're at Texas Tech, you can win a national championship. You don't have to, if I'm the coach, I don't have to leave to go to Alabama or Clemson or Florida State to try to win a national championship. I can do it at Texas Tech. Indiana set the, whereas before you basically had to be a coach at one of those, I don't know, 8 to 10 programs in college football if you wanted to even have a chance to compete.
That's a great point. And if anything, I think that's been good for the game. You mm-hmm. brought up the perfect example. And again, with what happened here at Penn State, we saw that this year. Kurt Cignetti, Matt Rhule, although Nebraska may have wished he had left. Mike Elko at Texas A&M wasn't going to leave. Sicati from Brigham Young, you know, they do two things. They tear up the contract, pay the coach more money, and they give him more money for his budget to bring players in. So if anything, I think that's a good thing that's come out of these ramifications. I think what they do have to clean up, though, is this. Not that the players have the right to leave their team, you know, and make four or five transfers, but that it's become too attractive and easy for players to leave. Mm-hmm. I think if they do better with the contracts that these players sign, you know, where, hey, look, just like with the coaches, You sign a contract here, a multi-year contract. If you want to leave, you can, but there's a buyout attached to it.
Right. And I think part of this too is going to be, you know, I think maybe a little bit of it's going to be education too, where, all right, I'm at Penn State and I want to transfer to, I'm trying to think of a good example here. I want to transfer to Ohio State. Okay, great. You're going to have to pay this buyout. Now, do you know what their what their state tax ramifications are? Do you know how much you're going to get paid? What's the agent's cut? You know, all of this stuff is going to be a factor. And I think there's going to be a lot of people who say, is it really worth me? And I've always contested this. What's the worst thing you do in life? It's move. I've done it multiple times. Is it worth the extra $50,000? Maybe to some kids it is. But I think a large portion of them would be like, you know what? Especially if you're an NFL level prospect, you're probably thinking, you know what? I'm going to make a lot of money. I don't need the $50,000. Maybe you could write something into my contract where if I have a performance based, I get a bonus or something like that, or I get another NIL opportunity. I think some of that stuff may start to work their way into contracts to be, you know what? We won't give you the guaranteed money, but if you hit these milestones, then you'll be, you know, up for a bonus, quote unquote.
Well, that's where, yes. And I think on the school side, they got to be better at creating these contracts.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
If you're a quarterback, you're dealing in millions of dollars. If you outplay your contract, the other school, and we've seen it already, you know, for Mensa to leave Duke to go to Miami, they're paying him enough to buy out a contract. We saw that literally the Cincinnati to Texas Tech move. They're paying the amount of what he would have been paid, you know, as the buyout. I think at other positions, you can do it. You know what? Here's, you sign a 3-year contract, 250 grand, 500, 750. But if you far out play that, if you become a star, hey, you could buy yourself out of the contract.
Yeah, right. Like, and I mean, we saw with, you know, we saw with Brendan Sorsby, like that essentially happened, right? And the good thing about that situation is, and I think we've seen some GMs even talk about this, like he played himself out of a contract. Cincinnati, probably to what you talked about earlier, Jim, where, you know what, we don't have the money. We need to have, we can't spend that much, you know, $5 million on one player. We don't have the funds to do that. Texas Tech can do that. But in return, we're going to get whatever it was. I don't know what he got, what the school got back in return.
I think it was $1 million, which I suspect is what Cincinnati would have paid him.
Right. That's what I think too. And so, but now you can say, you know what? We don't need a Brendan Sorsby to win. We need, another quarterback who can come in and then we can spend that money on, as you kind of pointed to, maybe we need a new center. Maybe we need a new right guard. Maybe we need a new defensive tackle. And if you can kind of piece that together with that extra $1 million, you might be, I don't want to say in better shape, but you could be in just as good a shape as they were this year. So there are some, I do think that the buyout portion of that, where there's some ramifications, I think are beneficial for college football, as opposed to just a few years ago when players could just up and leave and then guys are, you know, programs are screwed essentially.
Exactly. Exactly. All right. That's going to be the final word, Dustin. Thank you so much. It was a fun conversation. Thank all of you for joining us. Make sure you come back next time on the Keystone Kickoff Show.
Happy Valley United is the NIL collective that serves all 31 sports and over 850 student athletes at Penn State. These opportunities allow student athletes to engage with charitable causes and participate in business engagements to build their brands while making a positive impact. The collective connects fans, alumni, businesses, and charities with student athletes harnessing the power of Nittany Nation. Go to happyvalleyunited.com to connect with your favorite Nittany Lion team.